This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Some in Congress have suggested that deadlines be set. That would be a mistake, as Senator Levin has said. It would throw a lifeline to terrorists who in recent months have suffered significant losses and casualties, been denied havens, and suffered weakened popular support. Timing in war is never predictable. There are no guarantees. And any who say that we've lost this war or that we're losing this war are wrong. We are not.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld testifying Thursday before the House Armed Services Committee about progress in Iraq. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore joins us. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Scott.
And Secretary Rumsfeld, in back-to-back hearings in the House and Senate, was joined by General John Abizaid, top U.S. commander in the Persian Gulf. And he said his assessment was that the Iraqi insurgency is just about as active as it was 6 months ago. Now, how does that statement square with the one of Vice President Cheney that the insurgency in Iraq is in its last throes?
Well, I suspect the Vice President would prefer to put it in different terms now. But it's clear that the military are speaking to a different audience and from a different perspective than our civilian government. As far as the White House is concerned, they seem to be very nervous about the rising feeling in Congress and in the public. So some kind of a timeline, when is it going to happen? When are you ever going to get out? And of course, they feel that it would be a terrible mistake to do that. The military, on the other hand, want to have it known that they are suffering there, that they don't have everything they need to fight this fight. They don't know how long this fight is going to go on. So you will get little differences, but I think they're differences of nuance for the same policy.
Iraq's Prime Minister, Ibrahim al-Jafri, joined Secretary Rumsfeld. He was in Washington, D.C. this week, and
right.
He says he opposes the creation of an exit timetable for
U.S. Right.
troops in Iraq. What else did the Prime Minister hope to accomplish, express, or gain?
Well, I think not much else. I was at a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations with Prime Minister al-Jafri and got the distinct impression that much on his mind is reading about the growing feeling of Congress and the public for setting some kind of timetable, would want to see our troops begin to come out. I think that he needed some kind of assurance that an American force would really stay the course, as they keep saying, and I think that Mr. Bush promised him that to lay it on the line in a comprehensive speech next Tuesday that the U.S. will stay as long as necessary.
Same time this week, Afghanistan, the news of Taliban militants launching attacks is back in the news. How do you assess the degree and depth of an insurgency?
I'm not sure what else you can say.
Well, of the Taliban in Afghanistan, a theater of war, obviously, in which U.S. troops still serve, but which a lot of Americans thought had more or less been closed down.
Well, you know, here you have an insurgency which has gone on now for at least 3.5 years. So if you want to talk about last throes, this may also not be the place to do that. There's been a big battle, over 100 guerrillas reported killed in southwest Afghanistan, but none of the leaders. This is another counterinsurgency, the one that people here thought was pretty well settled some time ago, but it comes back.
Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, one of the ranking Democrats in the Senate, apologized this week for comments that he made about the treatment of detainees in U.S. custody.
Yes.
The senator read from an FBI memo last week describing conditions of detainees at Guantanamo, and he made comparisons to the Nazis and Soviet gulags. Which, of course, led to the uproar and demands for an apology.
And which he gave in an almost tearful manner on the floor of the Senate.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the controversy over his choice of words and language?
Well, I think that fighting over words is a lot easier for people in the government than trying to settle issues. Rather than talk about Guantanamo and what the FBI found in Guantanamo, he allowed himself to go a little far in making his pitch, and the result was that he got battered down for that. Where Rove, the president's...
Karl Rove?
Karl Rove, yes. The president's political maven said that here we have the Democrats who reacted to 9/11 by offering therapy for the terrorists. So now the Democrats are very sore, and 6 Democratic senators have written Rove demanding an apology from him. That is a game that's being played now. It makes everybody feel they're doing something if they demand apologies. Why people go on saying things they have to apologize for, I don't know.
The president is having a tough time pushing through some key aspects of his agenda in Congress. His nominee for U.N. Ambassador, John Bolton, continues to be the object of a filibuster by Democrats. Mm-hmm. And in the House this week, Republicans began drafting Social Security bills that do not include a provision for the creation of private accounts, mm-hmm. which, of course, had been at the heart of the president's vision for Social Security reform. Why private accounts been dropped from the House bills?
Well, I'm not sure they're exactly dropped. The idea of private accounts wasn't getting anywhere during President Bush's 60-day, 60-city tour of the country. And more interesting is why he refuses to give up altogether on private accounts. The newest idea to be floated in Congress is to use only the current surplus for private accounts and not go all the way. That would be, they say, a beginning.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this week against a group of Connecticut homeowners who were fighting a city plan to raise their homes to make way for a hotel and convention center. The court, and you had a strange alliance here of people who often mm-hmm. do not vote on the same side, both liberals and conservatives, held that local governments have the power to seize home for private developers because that might be in the larger economic interests of the city. How do you see the implications of this decision?
Well, the implications are, eminent domain. I learned about it in civics in high school. You can take private property if you need it for public use. But you think of public use as being roads and bridges and things like that. Now you have a 5-person majority on the Supreme Court saying public use can also be if you need to have some industry there and be able to get some taxes from those industries. That is also public use. It sounds to me like something of an extension of what eminent domain was really meant by the Constitution writers to be, but there it is. Mm.
And finally, Corporation for Public Broadcasting is no longer facing the possibility of a $100 million budget cut. The funding mm-hmm. was restored this week by a vote in the House. More than 80 Republicans opposed the plans of their own party members on the subcommittee to make that cut. On the same day, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting selected a new president and CEO, Patricia Harrison, a former Republican Party official. What do you make of both events?
Well, the one event is as to be expected. This is the administration trying to put trusted people in the CPB. This one was formerly co-chairman of the Republican Party. And that's the way they do. They think that's their way of putting their stamp on what is going on in radio and television. Frankly, I thought that the cut of $100 million might be restored in the Senate. I didn't expect it to happen in the House. And what is very interesting is what that says about the people around the country. I'm told there were more than 1 million emails and other forms of address telling the Congress it couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And to see that then turn up in a vote in the whole House of Representatives surprised me.
Thanks very much, Dan Schor.
Yep.